Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 215 of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast for this here Thursday, June 18th, 2015. I am your host, Mark Kuznez, and on today's episode, I will be talking about Usagi Drop, Amagi Brilliant Park, and Yuki Yuna is a Hero. So, put on your seatbelts. Because it's going to be a bumpy ride in Brilliant Park. Amagi Brilliant Park. Don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, so that's what's on the docket for this pocket podcast. I don't know. But yeah, that is what y'all can expect out of this show. And of course, as always, timestamps for each particular section, each particular show can be found in the post on pixelatedsausage.com. And yeah, I'm thinking that I'm going to make this the regular schedule. Mondays and Thursdays. Mondays I will be doing the weekly roundup because that will have given people time to have caught up on their shows pretty much. And then I'll, you know, if I've watch or so between, you know, over the weekend, then I can add that on the back end of that. And then on Thursdays, I'll go over shows I watch in between that time period. Kind of straightforward, isn't it? But yeah, that's what I'm thinking so far. And I'm not going to solely say that I will only be ever talking about anime on this podcast from now on. I just haven't had anything else to really talk about. It's hard to talk about art, because I think art is something that's much better to just show people. It's much more of a show, less of a tell. And I haven't really played many games or whatnot. I played a bit of Scream Ride, and that's okay, I guess. I think it would have been better as like a $25 downloadable title that allowed you to purchase each of the different versions, since there are three different kind of games in it for $10 each if you wanted to buy an individual one only. But yeah, that's pretty much all I've been playing, oddly enough. I keep meaning to check the Steam sale to see if that Hattable boyfriend, whatever, the pigeon loving game is on sale, because I'd really love to play that game. Or anything of the like. But yeah, enough of me rambling on in this intro. I'm sure y'all are saying and thinking and screaming at your whatever you're listening to this on. Anything else worth talking about? I don't think so. Insane Ninja! Shing! What's your favorite anime? Oh, that's a question I've been asked quite often. And I'm assuming most, if not all of y'all, have been asked it as well, or maybe you, I'm pointing right at you, you have done the asking yourself. Because we all like to know what our fellow fans of this and that, think highly of, what they think is the best of the best. And in most cases, I have been unable to answer the question when it comes to music or video games, comics, books, etc. I could do with movies, but pretty much everything else, including anime, I've never been able to just definitively say this. But now that has changed, because I have seen, finally, Usagi Drop. And I can say without question that Usagi Drop is my favorite anime. And I have a hard time thinking of or believing that any anime will be able to trump it in the future. You know, never say never. That's something you should always say. You should never say never, but always say never, if that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, after watching it, it's about as close to perfect as any anime has ever gotten for me. And I mean, it might be perfect as far as I'm concerned. But I'll get into that as I do this little review. Why don't I talk about exactly what Usagi Drop is, or otherwise known as Bunny Drop. because there are bunnies that just drop all the time in the show. That's why I love it. I really am. I'm a huge fan of bunnies, and bunnies be dropping like flies. Oh yeah, that's not true at all. So Usagi Drop follows two characters mainly, Daikichi and Rin, and they're related, but not in the way you might expect. Daikichi's grandfather passed away, and when going back to his grandfather's home for the funeral, he sees this little girl standing outside. She doesn't really say anything. They lock eyes, and then she kind of just runs off, and he's confused as to who she is. He thinks at first that maybe it's his cousin's Haruku daughter, Reina, which they have similar names, at least, Reina and Rin. But when you meet Reina, you can see that they look nothing alike. Reina's a more typical-looking little girl, and Rin looks kind of Americanized in a way. She has blondish hair. She has fairly light hair, and she's also... She has like softer features, not so, big eyes and big everything. But yeah, not his cousin's daughter. Whose daughter is it? It is his grandfather's daughter. Oh my God. And no one seems to have known she even existed. She's about 7 years old, I believe, at the time of the funeral. And the one thing I do find funny about that is the fact that everyone's giving Daikichi a hard time because he hasn't been coming back home that often, I guess. And yet, no one knew about this little girl. So did they not visit their grandfather, father, etc. all this time either? Or did he just do a good job of hiding her? Or, you know, he would have her be watched by someone else? It's surprising that no one knew she existed this whole time. And the mother's not in the picture. The mother was actually, you'll find out later in the show, that the mother is the grandfather's former maid, and she's quite young. And she never really was that involved in Rin's life. And so, at the funeral, we kind of, you know, we're just seeing the family try and figure out what to do with this little girl who now no longer has a father. She has a family in that all of those people at the funeral are her family, technically, but no one really is either able to or wants to, kind of, in a way, take care of this little girl. But for whatever reason, Daikichi is like, no, I mean, one of Daikichi's uncles mentions, you know, maybe we should just find her a home right away, you know, some house that she can, you know, like a foster house or something like that. And Daikichi's like, I'll just take her. And everyone's kind of surprised because it would appear that before this point, Daikichi was not the most responsible person. It's not the person you would immediately think, oh, he'd make a great father. But he takes her in, and I think part of it is because he sees some of himself in her, and also sees some of his grandfather in her. And there's something about Rin that is just, I don't know, it draws you in as a person, because she is very different than other children. And I think that is something that could be a problem for some people watching the show, is that she is kind of perfect. I mean, she is capable of handling everything that's going on extremely well. She is the most well-adjusted little 7-8-year-old girl I have ever seen in my life. She is able to handle her grandfather's death particularly well, and when other things are happening, she handles them pretty well. She might be a little frustrated at this or that, but she gets over things really quickly, or is able to say, it's almost as if she's already able to understand that, you know what, life is life, bad things are going to happen, but you just got to keep living your life. It's like she already knows that about life. So that could be annoying to some people, that she's not more emotionally sporadic. She's just a very well-adjusted little girl. And I think, you know, they comment on that at times when Daikichi calls her a young lady. And she likes being called the young lady, referred to as a young lady. She seems to want to reach adulthood rather quickly. She's like, what can I be, when am I going to be a young lady and whatnot? And trying, like, if there is a point when they're going through the not supermarket, but kind of department store. And she's like, oh, I want to get this lipstick because it'll make me a young lady. It's like, no, that's not happening. But Daikichi takes her in, and what the show really is just a kind of slice of life, which I hate that term, but it's just you get to see how the relationship grows and how Daikichi changes as he gets to know her more and takes on the responsibility. And you know, and it initially is something that he looks at as potentially just a temporary thing, but then soon, you know, he realizes that he really cares for this little girl and wants to keep her. But you just follow their life for a year from the death of Daikichi's grandfather to the year anniversary of that death. And what I really love about the show is that it just handles that relationship, that parental child relationship, that parent-child relationship so well. And I, if y'all know me at all, especially if y'all listen to my Flash little review for that the TV show, not comic or anything, y'all know that things about parents and children, when handled well, they get me deep down to my core and hit me where all the feels exist. And Usagi Drop does that so beautifully. It's not manipulative. It doesn't try and manufacture feels. It never gets super emotional. There are emotional things, but there's never like, oh, this is so obviously kind of pandering or whatnot. It's never kind of forcing emotional scenes or moments. It all feels natural. It feels incredibly grounded in real life. There are so many little subtle interactions between Daikichi and Rin, and it's just really beautifully handled. And there are so many great little moments between the two when, you know, I look at the show, and when I finished it, I immediately wanted to rewatch it again to just experience it because I loved it so much. And the last thing that, and maybe the only other thing that has really hit me in this way with a parent-child relationship, because it's kind of similar, is Monsters Incorporated with Sully and Boo. Because Boo is just this adorable little thing, as Rin is. And I just cannot get enough of their relationship. It's so wonderful to watch them interact and to watch Daikichi in his own ways while Rin is growing up. He's growing up as well. You know, he takes the demotion at work so they'll have more time to spend with Rin and won't have to be arriving late to pick her up from school or daycare. He's really just putting her above himself, stopping, you know, he no longer goes out drinking or, you know, goes out doing this or that. He really puts Rin above all else. And it's wonderful to watch that happen. And I don't know, it's weird. I'm kind of at a loss for words when it comes to this show, just because I just feel like people should go out and watch it and that it shouldn't be talked about too much. There's nothing to be said about it really, because it is such a great show. I think it is a show that everyone should watch, even if it's not typically your thing. If you're somebody who's more into fantasy or action or whatever else and not really into the more
reality-based shows. I still think it's a show that everyone should watch. It's, as far as I'm concerned, one of the, oh, you wanna get into anime? Then this is one of the shows you have to watch. I also think that unless you know someone is particularly into those kind of, fantasy or sci-fi or whatever, this is one of the best shows to use when introducing someone to anime. Especially if you know someone who's really against anime because they just think everything is like, oh, it's just all magical girls or, guys screaming and their hair turning blonde and whatnot. If people have a certain assumption about what anime is and can't get past that, if you show them Usagi Drop, their opinion will change. If it doesn't, then you know there's something wrong with that person because Usagi Drop is very different from those type of shows, and it's handled so well. It's a beautiful story between a father figure and a child. It's a wonderful little tale, and the side characters, the supporting characters are all really good too. You have a few of her friends, like you do. Like I was saying, you have his cousin, Daikichi's cousin, Haruku, and her daughter, Reina, who you see every now and again, who's incredibly annoying. Your more typical annoying little girl, except when Haruku runs away from her husband's in-laws and her husband for the night and goes to Daikichi's place. For whatever reason, Reina in that moment seems actually kind of sweet and normal and not so, oh, give me all the sweets. I'm going to make a mess out of things. I'm not going to listen. She seems way more tolerable at that point. You also have this single mother who Daikichi befriends and her son who Rin befriends and who they interact with a lot. They help out each other in various ways, and there seems to be somewhat of a liking of one another between the mother and Daikichi. The mother's name is Yukari, and the son, I think, is Koki. Koki, who's a brat, your typical young little boy brat, who just is loud and obnoxious and just makes a ruckus and a mess, like boys do. But yeah, you have also Daikichi's mother and I think, yeah, it's his father, who are occasionally in the show and, seeing them interact with their, technically, their aunt, Rin, is sweet as well. And it's just a well-realized little slice of this small world. And it's a beautiful little story to watch. I also think that visually, it's quite beautiful, especially at the beginning of each episode. They have a different coloring style. It's more watercolor-esque, and then it kind of goes to a more flatter style, which I don't know why it does that, because I really love that watercolor vibe to the beginning of each episode. But I do think the art is quite lovely. It has a very soft-esque palette. The color, there's not too much vibrancy in the show. It's everything's a bit muted, but not too much. And Rin is this adorable little girl, and Daikichi, his face is wonderfully animated. Throughout the show, he has a very different. I'm trying to think, and I feel like his features are different than every other character, that his facial features are just shaped in a more unusual, non-typical manner compared to all the other characters who are much more. Oh, that's. Yeah, I've seen that kind of face. But yeah, it's just a fantastic little show. And something I obviously highly recommend because I'm calling it my favorite anime. But yeah, y'all should definitely check out Usagi Drop. If you're listening to this, I'm assuming you're into anime already. And if not, I highly recommend checking Usagi Drop out as your first. It is on Crunchyroll. It's only 12 episodes, maybe 11. 11 or 12 episodes. So it's a short show. Easily digestible. I watched it in 2 days. I would have watched it in a single day if I had the time in a single day to do so. But yeah, it's a fantastic show. But before I finish this review, I do want to talk a little bit about the manga, which the show is based off of. I haven't looked too deeply into it, but I've heard some things. And if you don't want to be spoiled about this, then skip ahead. Timestamps will be, of course, in the post. So you've officially been warned. So in the manga, it goes past where the show ends, and there is a time jump at a certain point, and I think the time jump's about 10 or so years. And what happens when that jump happens is that apparently Rin falls in love with Daikichi. And I mean in a romantic way, not in a I love you daddy way, but in a will you be my daddy way, my dirty daddy way. So that is weird that it turns into this incestual type of relationship, and Daikichi is initially not having it, not feeling it, because of course he was a father figure for her all these years, but I think he actually turns around. I'm not sure. I haven't looked too deeply into it because I'm not sure if I want to or not. And the only way I can see this kind of being justified or not being as awful as it is, even though regardless of what I'm about to say, the father-daughter relationship was still the relationship they knew for so long. I'm assuming Rin did not look at Daikichi when she was 7 and 8 and was like, oh, he's so sexy, he's so hot, I love him as more than just a father. But my only way of seeing this kind of be okay in a way, in kind of a Woody Allen and his wife way, is that I do wonder, it's never brought up in the show, I do wonder if Rin is actually Daikichi's grandfather's daughter. And I say this because of her blonde hair and the fact that her mother, who is this really young girl, doesn't have blonde hair. And I don't think we ever see any picture of the grandfather when he was young, you know, so he has gray hair now. But I highly doubt he had blonde hair, because nobody in that family does. But the mother's boyfriend, who I don't know how long they were going out together, how long their relationship has been going on, or you know, what she was doing when she had Rin. But her boyfriend at the time, when the series is going on, that those years of Rin's life, he's got light-colored hair. So, you know, I'm sure it does happen in the world, but typically I don't think two people with jet black hair would produce an offspring with blonde, really, really light brown hair, strawberry blondish hair. So it makes me wonder if at some point in the manga it is discovered or implied or something that she is not actually the grandfather's daughter and therefore not blood related to Daikichi, making their relationship not incestual. It's still weird, of course. But yeah, I don't know if that is the case or not. But yeah, that about the manga is something that leads everyone to say, if anyone recommends the show, they typically say, don't read the manga. Don't, it'll ruin the show. For me, it doesn't ruin the show knowing that, because I'm able to disassociate such things. I won't let something ruin something else for me, even if it's the same universe. It's like, oh, I hated Spider-Man 3, so therefore I hate the Spider-Man movies that came before it. Or X-Men Wolverine Origins was so bad, so now I hate Wolverine. Or they ruined Deadpool, so I can't like Deadpool anymore. I mean, I don't, whatever. You know, there are things that aren't great, but as far as this is concerned, the anime I look at as a standalone property. It's its own thing. And, you know, the manga, you know, it's based off the manga, of course. That doesn't mean you can't appreciate and love the series on its own merits as its own thing, which is what I do and which is what y'all should do. I still may check out the manga just because I'm a bit curious to see how they handle that whole thing, because that's not something I would ever do if I was writing the story. It's not a direction I would ever take their relationship in, take the story down that path, but the writer apparently wanted to do that, and I'm just curious to see how they go about doing that. I'm not going to immediately rush to say, oh, this is a terrible thing to do. It's not something I would do, but that doesn't mean it's not. Yeah, I'm curious. I am curious. But, yeah. Don't worry about the manga. Just watch the anime. It is fantastic, and if you don't end up liking it, then I don't know what to do with you. So, Usagi Drop. It's on Crunchyroll. I think I already said that. But, yeah, definitely check it out. It'll be a quick watch. And if you can, I would highly recommend watching it with your parents, because it's a wonderful, you know, parent-child show. It's so beautiful. So beautiful. I can't get enough of it. I just want to watch more of it. I do kind of want more of it, which is why I'm like, I want to read the manga, but then there's a time jump, so I'm like, I don't want to read the manga. But so good. So good.
Inside Ninja! Shing!
If you're looking for a show that's a bit crazy and doesn't involve taxis, that's a bit weird and out there, out of this world, but technically in this world, it doesn't take place in another world. Amagi Brilliant Park may be what you're looking for. It's a little weird. It's a weird show in its ways and kind of, it's just weird. But great. Great in a weird way. Weird in a great way. It follows a character who is basically forced to help this amusement park stay afloat and reach a certain visitor goal so that it won't be shut down, and therefore all these characters will not have to go elsewhere for work, or in some cases no longer exist, because the people who work there, not all of them, but a lot of them are actually fairies in disguise. And they're not your typical fairies. They're not all fairies with wings and whatnot, but like giant mice and mole people and sheep and other animals, because that's just what they are. They look like mascots, because amusement parks have mascots of the like, but they're actually not suits. They're just what these characters look like. And the character the show focuses on, Seiya, he is an incredibly narcissistic bunghole. He's the kind of person who just thinks so highly of himself. He, you know, he's like, oh, I am so hot. And there are little points in the show where you can see through that, you know, there's a part of him that doesn't feel that way, and that, you know, potentially it's all a front, but he keeps up that front so often that I'm still not sure. Maybe if we get more seasons, we'll get to dive a bit deeper into that. But Seiya is forced by this, I think she's either a transfer student or a freshman. She's a new student to his high school, Izuzu. And she basically forces him on a date, by pulling out a gun and essentially saying, you're going to go on a date with me or I'm going to shoot you. Because that's the way she handles everything. She's from a military family, so she hobbles. She handles everything with her guns that she can just pull out of her skirt. They're rifles, so they're huge. They just magically are. It's like Mary Poppins. Her skirt is like Mary Poppins' purse, and she can just pull out these two guns and then shoot everyone with non-lethal ammunition. And that's what she does. She shoots people all the time, and it's hilarious. That's probably my favorite part of the show, is when she shoots everyone, which I don't know what that says about me, that I love more than anything when the specific character just goes around shooting everyone, because that's the way she solves every problem. She does not have the best social skills, and thus she resorts to shooting everyone when people are not giving her what she wants. But she forces them on this date to this amusement park, and he's just like, this is garbage, this is crap. And the reason she does that is because she wants to show him this park, because there has been a prophecy, I guess, that says he will help them reach their goal. Because if the park does not reach a certain visitor goal for 5 consecutive years, it will be not destroyed, but the deed or whatever will be taken away, I guess. I believe that's the case, by this group of people or whatnot. And if that happens, these mascots, these fairies, will have to find a new park to work at, or in some cases, as you find out later on in the show, the princess, who is sort of the owner, the main gal at this amusement park, she will no longer exist if the park doesn't exist. She lives off of the joy of the guests at the amusement park. And without that, she will no longer exist. So if the park no longer exists, if it's no longer running, then she will no longer exist. And they hire, aka force, Seiya to work there to become the general manager of the park, to reach a certain goal of, I believe, 500,000 visitors over the course of, I think, 3 months. And over the previous 9 months, I don't even know if they reached 10,000. I think they were around 100,000, somewhere in that mark. So he had a lot of catching up to do. And you just follow them as they're trying and failing a lot and slowly making their way to the goal over the course of, I think, 12 episodes. I'm not sure if I mentioned that. I'm pretty sure I did. Can't remember because I'm losing my mind. But yeah, it's a fun show. It's mature in its ways because you have these fairies who are, like, so crazy. The two, you have Macaron and Termi, who are, Macaron's a giant sheep, who's, like, the fairy of music. And then Termi, who apparently is a dog, but to me looks like a giant pink cat, is the god of flowers. But they're, like, I mean, they're all, like, alcoholics. And when they get super intense, I mean, Termi, or is it Macaron? And when they get really intense, their face gets super disturbing. But one of them drugs Izuzu with a pill that makes her tell the truth. And he does that because he wants to test it out before using it on his daughter to try and get a better relationship with her. But when that happens, Izuzu, she starts to admit, though she stops herself, she like put her hands over her mouth to stop herself from saying that she kind of has these feelings for Seiya, and will constantly also at the same time just smash her head against whatever like wall or table she's at. And it's funny in that way, because there are all these little off-the-wall bits and pieces to it, and the amusement park aspect of it all is fun when they're playing around with these various rides that are that just seem like so crazy and way too dangerous because they're like from this fantasy world, or I'm trying to think of something. There's something I was just thinking of that just completely flew out of my mind. But it's a fun show, very colorful. It's easily digestible. It's a nice little show. It's a fun show that would be great in between, you know, heavy shows or action-packed shows. It's a nice, pleasant show. I feel like, you know, like I said, there are a few adult aspects to it, so I'm not sure if it's the best for younger kids, but I don't think there were too many problems. I do find it amusing that I feel like it would be easy to get a lot of male adults to go visit the four singing fairies who are just scantily clad ladies because they're scantily clad ladies, but everyone seems to not. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. But yeah, it's a fun show, and the one problem I have with it is that it seems like they really are struggling to get any visitors. It's like they're struggling to just get 10 more visitors than usual, and you know, it's constantly growing, but never to any significant degree. And it just seems like they're struggling, and then they're only like 50,000 visitors away. It's just like there's this jump that I don't know where it happened. It just seems like they got to the goal, and I didn't see how they got to the goal, really. I know in the last episode where they have this big soccer game that, you know, gives them like 50,000 whatever to pass the goal, and you know, they call in some support at the very end for that. But yeah, it's just, that was the weird thing about the show, is that it seemed like there were episodes missing. And I was just like, wait, weren't they just at like 200,000 or something, and now they're at 450? Oh, and now they succeeded. But no, they need them to come back. But there are also overarching storylines that would continue into future seasons that I hope we get, like the princess who she would forget her memories every single year after this. I think it was August 1st at midnight. She would forget her memories and not age at all. She would remain 14 years old over and over and over again because of a curse from a wizard who stopped a dragon, and then the king sent his army to kill the wizard because he promised the wizard his daughter, but he's like, I ain't giving you my daughter. I just wanted you to kill that dragon. I was lying. So he curses her, and that's her curse. And we get to see the wizard for a little bit. And, of course, he only agreed to help them reach their goal, and then he's like, I'm done. But then, of course, at the very end, he's like, I'm not done. But, yeah, it's a fun show. And I definitely recommend checking it out. I'm hoping we get more, and I'm patiently waiting for a Blu-ray release in the States, because I would like to own it. That is telling, I guess, of how much I did enjoy it, is that I would like to own it. But yeah, it's a solid show. It's a really fun show. And it's just kind of fun to watch these ridiculous characters interact with each other. And apparently they have these amulets too that allow normal humans to not be alarmed by their appearance. Though I'm not sure if that just means they see them as what they are and they just accept it when they're by them, or if they actually see them as regular humans. Then they don't really go into that. Because their appearance never changes. But yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's quirky in its own ways. They have suits for people that leave giant zippers on the top of their head. And they are always beating the crap out of each other. And it's so wonderful whenever people are arguing and won't agree or won't work together. We can always count on Isuzu to pull out her guns and shoot some people. And who doesn't love that? Yeah. Fun. Fun, fun, fun. That's what the show really is. It's fun. Like an amusement park should be. If Amagi Brilliant Park was an actual amusement park, I would go there. And I would hope I'd get shot in the face. Not really. Because it looks painful. Yeah. Fun show. And it... I mean, I don't want to say it's like too... Like it has too many surprise moments, but... It plays around with expectations a bit and has fun with them. So it'll keep you on your toes at times, which is nice, you know, to not always get what you expect. I mean, there are plenty of moments where it's like, oh, I saw that coming. But then there, you know, there's the moment here and there where it's like, oh, I didn't know that was going to happen. So that's nice. And also the character design and all that, the art is really, really, really good. I really like the art. It's both cute and creepy and can get really, really realistic too. So it's fun in that way. And I like the way you have certain characters that play off type in that you have this vicious shark. I mean, well, we all expect sharks to be vicious, but he's kind of like a scaredy cat. And he doesn't even realize that when he gets wet, he looks like a real shark, a super violent, like, humongous, scary shark. And when he sees himself for the first time when he's wet, he's scared of himself. So it's a fun show. Definitely recommend checking it out. And it's all available on Crunchyroll right now, except for the 13th episode for licensing issues. Will they ever get that episode? Not sure, but of course... I didn't think I was missing anything out by not seeing it, and from all I've heard and read, it's not an essential episode, so don't worry about that. Yeah, check it out, Amagi Brilliant Park. It is, you know what, kind of brilliant.
Inside Ninja! Shing!
So, you know, I've noticed that I say... You know a lot, and I'm going to try and cut back on all that, because, you know, if somebody is able to notice something happening so frequently when they're doing it themselves, because usually when, you know, somebody is doing something often, it's kind of just second nature, and they don't even realize it, but... If it gets so bad, maybe it's bad, I don't know. But that I notice it, and I just feel like I'm saying, you know, a lot, and that's annoying. And there are other habits that I'd like to break from as well, but I'm going to try and, you know, not say, you know, so much. But this isn't about you know, okay? This is about Yuki Yuno is a hero. Is she a hero? This is a show I've been recommended quite often and kind of been told to watch repeatedly for a while now. And I kind of just was like, I'm going to go off and watch shows that I find myself. I'm all for getting recommendations, but I'd like to go and just dive into various shows myself. I'd like to just go searching randomly as well. So, yeah, Yuki Yuna is a Hero is one of the old classic magical girl show. The only other one of the whole magical girl genre that I've seen is Puella Magia Madoka Magica? Is it Magi? Is that the second word? I'm trying to remember. Everyone typically forgets the first two words anyway when they talk about that show. But this is my second venture into the magical girl genre, and I quite enjoyed Madoka Magica. So yeah. I didn't know this was, I mean, I guess I could have assumed this was a magical girl show because of the title. But I didn't know that going in. And I've watched 5 episodes, so I'm about halfway through. It's a 12-episode series. I don't know if there are any plans for a second season. Because I don't know how the first season ends. And it is a fairly recent show. It was part of the, I think, fall lineup of 2014. So, anyway, the show follows first 4, then a 5th magical girl is added fairly soon, who go into this other world. It's really just like a layer over the current world to fight off these creature things called vertexes. And they need to do so, otherwise if they reach a certain point in the land, then the regular world will be destroyed. And it's when this happens, when a vertex like invades their territory, basically everything just freezes, and then this beautiful layer of color starts to just envelop the entire world, and it looks very beautiful. I don't know if that's a very common thing with magical girl shows, like with Madoka Magica, that the whole things get super crazy in the magical realm. But if that is, then that alone may get me to watch any magical girl show, regardless of the quality of everything else. Because the visual change when that happens in both Madoka Magica and Yuki Yuno as a hero, I just love. It's different than so many other shows I watch. It's just different, and it's very interesting, especially from an artist's point of view. It's nice to see it, and it's very pleasant for the eyes. It's an entertaining thing to watch. But is everything else entertaining? Oh. So they, the world freezes, then it gets enveloped by this beautiful layer of color that I'm like, man, you should just let it destroy you, or I don't know, just like imprison it, don't destroy it so that you can just stay in this beautiful world. Who needs other people anyway? But yeah, they battle these vertexes. They, of course, do their old transformations and whatnot. And then they battle these vertexes that are these giant, usually, typically slowly moving, mechanical looking creatures. They, I'm trying to think if any of them seem that. There are a few that are more organic, but they seem to be much more like solid than not. But they have their outdoor, their regular world lives. They're part of the Hero Club, and they were all picked because they have some kind of, I guess, sensitivity to this power within themselves that they can draw upon when they're in this alternate world. And yeah, it's okay. So the whole premise of the thing was there are 12 of these vertexes, and when they destroy all 12, then they don't have to worry about anything. And in the 5th episode, they already destroyed all 12. So it's 5 episodes in, and all 12 have been destroyed because three of them attacked at one point, and then like all the rest of them just attacked in this last episode. And it looked like they were going to get defeated, but of course they didn't. And nobody died. And I was like, oh, yay. I guess we're going to be okay for a while, but then something crazy is going to happen in the last few episodes, and it's going to be like, oh, that's probably when Yuna is going to become the hero. I'm just assuming, because the title does not leave much for the imagination. But the thing I don't like about this show compared to Madoka Magica, and maybe I'm just thinking back on Madoka Magica with rose-colored glasses, even though I didn't... I enjoyed it for the most part, but, like, those last three episodes were amazing. But the thing that annoys me about Yuki Yuna is that it feels really soap opera-y. And I don't know if that's a typical, if that's also something that's common with magical girl shows. Like I said, I'm not that familiar with these types of shows, and it's really not my foray. It's not something that I would typically go for if I was given a choice. I would much rather, like, I do enjoy the shows that are more grounded in reality, and if they're not grounded in reality, I want, like, super rom-commy garbage, because I'm a rom-commy kind of guy. That's just me. Deep down, I'm just a softie for romance. Oh, but yeah, there's just all these moments where it's like, oh, this person looks like they're going to get defeated, so this person stands up, and somebody is like, you know, everyone else is not being able to make an impact on an enemy, but then one stands up, and then everyone just says their name. It's like, Yuna, Yuna. It's just like, oh my god, you're driving me crazy. I don't know. It just feels so over the top at times, and yeah, I can't take it when it's so overly dramatic, and oh, it's like, oh my god, they're all gonna die. Oh, but of course they're not. That's the one thing I liked about Madoka Magica as well, spoilers for that show, is that they weren't afraid, and I don't know where this show is going to go in the future episodes, but they weren't afraid to just kill off a character and do it early on, or do it when you don't expect, or to have ways of bringing them back and still not bring them back because of, you know, it would affect this or that. So I really liked the way Madoka Magica handled everything. And this seems a bit more, I don't know, paint by numbers, even though I don't know if this is, you know, all common for the magical girl genre. Also, because they've already defeated the 12 vertexes, and, you know, of course, there will be some threat upcoming. I'm not sure what the next few episodes are going to be, if it's just going to become a slice of life show, which is going to be weird, I think, maybe. Or maybe I'm going to like it more. Because I'm not going to deal with this. Or maybe I'll like it less because I won't be able to see that beautiful, colorful world. Yeah. I don't know. I also say a lot. There you go. In addition to saying, yeah, no. Yeah. It's good. The characters are all not... they're fine. Nobody stands out as being particularly great. I might say of all of them, I like the new one the most, Karin, who came in and she was like, oh, I was molded after y'all were tested on to see how y'all would work out, and I'm the peak of magical girl power. And I'm going to be your superior, even though I'm not the eldest. But that didn't work out. But I kind of like watching her kind of open up more and more as I watch more episodes. Because she came in as a very, you know, like, oh, I'm a professional. I know what I'm doing. I'm just going to train. I don't need to grow friendships with these other girls. I don't need to get too bonded with them. But she's, you know, opening up. I just said, you know, mother, lover, love your mothers, people. You should always love your mothers. You know that? yeah. It's okay. It's also on Crunchyroll, like so many shows. And I think I might, because I have this collection of shows, and I think I should maybe watch something that's not on Crunchyroll for a change. Something that you can't... I don't know... I actually don't know if it's streaming anywhere, but The Familiar of Zero, I think it's called. I have the first season or two. Because it sounded and looked interesting. So I should check that out. But I'll probably finish this first. I don't want to leave series hanging. Because then I'll just forget things. I'll tell you one thing about anime. Because there are a lot of names that are repeated across various shows. And I'm already terrible with names. That's the one thing that's the most difficult when talking about shows. Is I need to go over as much as I can with character names. Yeah. That has nothing to do with Yuki Yuna as a hero, though. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's okay. As far as, you know, in the world, in the vast array of magical girl shows, I don't know where it lies because I don't watch that genre. But yeah, if you watch a lot of magical girl esque shows, let me know what y'all think of this particular show, and I'd love to be recommended some other ones, especially. Anything that, I mean, I did really enjoy Madoka Magica. It was really good. And that ending, if you haven't watched that show, oh, it is so good. That ending, that like 3-episode final arc kind of, it's just so good. It was a pretty good show, and then it just got amazing. I still haven't seen the movies. I think there are more than one. But yeah, Yuki Yuna is a hero. Not too bad. Not the greatest thing I've ever seen. But, you know, what is other than Usagi Drop? Don't forget to watch that show because it's so good.
Inside Ninja! Shing!
Well, that will do it for this here episode of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast. I hope y'all enjoyed it. And hope y'all have a lovely rest of the day wherever you are. Once again, I'm your host, Mark Jenez. Y'all can find me on Twitter and Instagram at PXSausage. That is, once again, PXSausage. If you're into the video games, check out the other podcasts I do, Pixelated Radio, which you can find at the site where you can also find this show, which you probably already know and could probably already guess, PixelatedSausage.com. And of course, both podcasts are on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, so if you haven't already, it would be greatly appreciated if you subscribed to both, particularly this show, not that I'm picking favorites, and rated and reviewed, because that does help out, and I would really be so appreciative of you if you did that. So thank you in advance for being such a wonderful person. And if you're a fan of racing, going vroom 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 in your cars, check out Sports Car Unleashed, which you can find at scunleashed.com. Once again, thank y'all for listening, and have a lovely, lovely day.
Lærer maður frá frakasti Kutu, ég glendi ekki því sem þú gerði Kutu, þú mátt ekki að Vala sér sokki Kutu Fyrir þú ekki fyrir núna Farðu Þetta maður mín Elska mín Mother of me, let that kiss you bad, let that kiss you bad, man. Því sem þú gerir kutu Núna sjáðu því sem ég mun gera kutu Hjartan skal deyja aldrei kutu har ikke gjort det før du. Før du. Før du. Dette motheren min, elsker min, motheren min. Lidt at kysse bare, lidt at kysse bare mere.